Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen.
So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point, then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up! It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up!
Now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Episode 196. We are live at 11. Culligan, funky like a monkey, if you will. Indeed. It is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. I am your host, Chris Featherstone, this wonderful Tuesday evening. This is what we do on Tuesday evenings, and we've been doing it, Derek, for 196 weeks now.
196 weeks ago, if you would have told me this, we'd still be on the air and, you know, have the empire that we created, I would have said you're a fool. I would have said there's no way, no. But you know what? We're still here. We've got an awesome electric fan base. I mean, it's just exciting. We've gotten, you know, we are Wrestling Nation. We got that fan base down pat, the best fans in the world for the new Tuesday Night Titans.
That's Chris, right.
We've got it. We've got this
right.
Down.
Absolutely, we do. We and not only we're here, we're thriving. We're doing a fantastic job. I mean, I've been looking at the numbers, and wow, just. It's humbling how many people support the Pancakes and Power Slam Show, and that's absolutely amazing. And I just, with 3R Wrestling, with the iTunes subscriptions, to Facebook, and through other streams of media online, people listen to the show, and people are into to the show, and they like it, and they enjoy it, and I enjoy that they enjoy it, and I appreciate that they enjoy it. So that's awesome. We are 4 weeks away, ladies and gentlemen, from episode 200. How about that? The 200th episode of Pancakes and Power Slams. What a monumental time. And we're going to have some announcements coming up about episode 200 coming up pretty soon. But let me tell you something. Right now, we are going to have so much fun on the year-end episode of the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. What I love about the formatting of this show is that you have Derek and I, who are we're actually the same age, interestingly enough, and we both are traditionalists. We are both have watched wrestling all of our lives. Derek is a former wrestler. He's a former independent wrestler, and he wrestled in the Heartland Wrestling Association as well. So he wrestled with a bunch of the now, you know, very popular names in the WWE and TNA before they were popular, including the Intercontinental Champion, Dean Ambrose. So, you know, Derek has shared a bunch of his stories. So he used to wrestle. I used to amateur wrestle. And, you know, I started a journalism career after that. Just my love of wrestling. I actually had two contracts, wrestling contracts, ready for me to sign. And I chose to endeavor other ways because I understood how much of the grind is with pro wrestling. So I actually trained, I actually did some MMA training and was thinking about going MMA too, but I was like, you know what? I really, there was a part of me that always wanted to be a doctor. So I just had to stay that course. And here we go. I'm 2 years away, actually less than 2 years away from becoming a doctor. Dr. Featherstone is on the rise. Dr. Chris is on the rise, and I'm so glad I decided to keep my path. But even in the path that I am endeavoring and purpose to have, I will never stop being a wrestling fan. And not only do I continue to watch wrestling, not only do I continue to have a passion for wrestling, I get paid for it now. I get paid to comment and write about what I want to write about and say what I want to say. So that's not only has watching wrestling benefited me just socially, it's benefited me financially over the years as being a journalist. So I'm very happy about that. So it all panned out well. And Derek, with his expertise, he is the baddest co-host on the planet. So I'm very, very grateful for Derek. Awesome. And I'll tell you what, man, you know, thank you. Congrats, Chris. Props to you. Hard profession to break into. Takes a lot of time and studying. Absolutely. I totally agree. So I'm really, really, really amazing. And thank you for all the followers. I got a comment of saying one of our original followers made a comment and got a reply saying you're a true follower. I'm a new follower. First of all, that rhymed. And then second of all, true or new, they're both appreciated just the same. So thank you very much. And continue to tell your friends and your family about the Pancakes and Power Slam show as we continue to go to further and further heights in the 2016 year. So, I mean, I know that I'm going to forget some, but, I mean, what, Matt Taven, Carlito, JTG, Moose, who else did we... Caprice, no, it was last year. Christopher Daniels, DDP, Eli Drake. Who else did we interview, Derek? Greg Gagne, the general of Pancakes of Power Slam show. My boy, Greg Gagne, friend of the show. He was absolutely amazing. Jim Brunzel. If I'm missing anybody, just let me know. Matt Seidel was another person. We interviewed D'Lo Brown. I think I might have said that, but thanks for saying that again, for bringing that up. Yeah, D'Lo Brown. Can you think of anybody else, Derek, that we interviewed this year?
We had Rico Constantine. I don't think he said that yet.
Yes, absolutely. Rico Constantino. Absolutely. He actually texted me about a week or so ago, and he's a really humble guy. He just texted me out randomly last about a week or two ago, asked me how I was doing, how my family was doing, and we just shared some encouragement. We both are very strong Christians, and we shared some encouraging words with each other, and just random out the blue. So it's great to be thought of by a former WWE tag team champion out the blue. So. You know, I really, really appreciate, times like that. So thank you very much. Very, very much. Who am I missing, Derek? Now, I know people are going to say some things. Yeah, I said Jim Brunzel already. Who else you said?
I mean, doggone it. I mean, there's just so much going on in the wrestling world. We can't keep track of that all the time.
Yeah, I gotta come up with the list, though. I gotta figure out the list, because I'm very, very grateful for everyone who I've interviewed here on the Pancakes and Power Slam show. So I definitely, yes, the Patriot, Del Wilkes, absolutely. So yeah, the list will continue to grow further and further. And I know that, you know, I'll get I'll compile the full list here soon, because I know that I'm, you know, from last year and the year before, you know, Crimson and Hanson. Speaking of Hanson, you know, one of the people who I interviewed on the Pancakes and Power Slams before, I watched Final Battle, and first of all, it was a great, great pay-per-view. And secondly, my boys, War Machine, one of my favorite tag teams out, probably my second favorite tag team in all of pro wrestling TV in the States, other than the New Day. New Day is just a clear-cut number one. And I'm a big fan of War Machine, too. So I've been a fan of War Machine probably since the inception of War Machine. And I'm very, very happy that ROH decided to give them the tag team championship. So that was really, really great. The match was cut short because Taven got injured. I reached out to Taven. He haven't got back with me yet. But yeah, we've conversed throughout the, I talked to him earlier in the year. It was actually during Super Bowl season when I interviewed Matt Taven. But yeah, it was great. But yeah, sad that he tweaked his knee. And so I'm just waiting back from him. I'll report the latest from Taven when he responds back to me. And I'll definitely let you all know that. But yeah, congrats to War Machine. Very, very happy that they are now the Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions. But yeah, Final Battle was great. I wrote an article about sounding off and giving the WAW Nation the opportunity to grade the three American televised promotions, WWE, TNA, and ROH. I wrote an article about WWE and TNA, and tomorrow or Thursday, I'll be sending out an article about Ring of Honor. But yeah, I'll pose that question to you, Derek, as far as WWE and TNA, and then I'm not going to spoil Ring of Honor too much, but as far as my grade, but I have some very high remarks to say about Ring of Honor, so stay tuned for that article. But what grade would you give WWE?
WWE would probably get a C average. Throughout the last year. I mean, and it's nothing really against Seth Rollins. He kind of carried him and everything. It's just, as a whole, I'm excited to see Monday Night Raw, but I can't say that if I miss one, oh well. Of course, I have to watch it because I do the show. However, I mean, as a fan, I would give it, it's average. You know, it's a bit lackluster a lot of times, and it could really use a shot of adrenaline in the arm.
Yeah.
But current state of the WWE, C average. What about you, Chris?
I believe I graded a C+. And the only reason why I said C+ was because of the recent storyline stuff, which actually brought it a little bit more interesting. I would say probably before this month, it would have been about a D+, to be honest with you, because just the terrible, terrible booking of Sting and especially Sting, Bray Wyatt and Cesaro. Those are the worst three recipients of booking. And to be honest with you, I would even add Seth Rollins into that booking, because I mean, he had the title for 7 months, and the WWE still did not a 7 month title reign. And they still didn't develop Seth Rollins to be just a standalone premier top guy. They did such a horrible job booking Seth Rollins as champion. He was weaselly. He wasn't even a strong heel. It was horrible how they booked Seth Rollins. So that was horrible. And then, of course, you know, Sting speaks for herself as far as the booking is concerned. That was absolutely, as a lifer, Sting mark. Sting, without question, I've said this 196 episodes. Within these episodes, I've said it many, many times. Sting is my all-time favorite wrestling, and he's been my number one favorite wrestler since I created a number one. And that was over 25 years ago. So even with it hurt my soul to see the WWE book Sting the way that they did. And it was just, it was tough. It was really tough to indulge. And you have him come in, you give him one of the best builds that you have given someone in 10 years at least, very reminiscent of his Crow character in the WCW, and there's no benefit from it. You do nothing. It was absolutely ridiculous. All of that build just to lose to Triple H. And I was sharing with a good friend of mine this weekend, actually, you know, as much of a Sting fan as I am, I understand how it is. I understand the importance of building characters. I get it. I understand it. If Sting would have beaten Triple H to put over Seth Rollins at Night of Champions, as much as just the kid in me would have been reluctant of that, I would have actually been much more okay with that than Sting losing a Triple H at WrestleMania, coming back as somehow the number one contender because he's a legend. If he was a legend, he should have won at WrestleMania in his first match ever. He comes back and he's in the best shape of, you know, his probably the last 5 years at least. He comes back, probably even longer than that. He comes back, gets in a program with Seth Rollins, and loses. And it's just absolutely ridiculous how they book Sting. It's just an atrocity how they built Sting. And then Bray Wyatt speaks for himself too, just up and down and up and down and up and down, lose just about every feud he's been in except for the Dudley Boys. And no one, you know, the Dudley Boys at this point shouldn't win any type of feuds. So it was just, and then Cesaro, oh, just absolutely ridiculous. So TNA was even worse, to be honest with you. And that says a lot. Just the inconsistencies of their booking. It gets to the point where I have, like, I'm forced to watch TNA at this point. Like, I feel forced just because I simply watch TNA because of the commentary, because I occasionally write about TNA. And so it is really, really tough to watch an episode of Impact Wrestling because, I mean, granted, I love Lashley's work. I'm still a fan of Bobby Lashley, but I mean, Bobby Roode is still a very solid worker, but there's not enough talent in TNA right now from a top talent standpoint, because EC3 is a great heel. I like the fact that he's kind of like they're grooming someone who was just a mid-carder in the WWE to being a very legitimate and good heel. I'm not a fan of EC3, but I respect the fact that they're building him up as a heel. I think it's a good idea. That was a plus from TNA, but just the revolving door of the Beatdown Clan, people getting released, people quitting, you know, the Hernandez deal with him and Lucha Underground. Yeah, it's just rough to even sit through an episode of Impact Wrestling. So I know that you're not a big TNA fan yourself, so based on what you've observed this year, what would you give TNA?
I'd give them a D, maybe even an F. I mean, they've totally failed. And, I don't follow TNA as closely as I should. I do like to follow Kurt Angle. But, I read on the, websites and chat rooms and stuff about the current TNA product, and it's just there's nothing there to watch. And you just there's nothing of any interest. If I don't find interest in it, at being a wrestling fan for my whole life, then why would anybody else? Because, I mean, I love wrestling. Watch that. I don't care. I could just as soon watch ping pong. So that's
exactly.
that's what it is. And, this just sucks because, they have talent. I mean, I can realize that. They do have talent. They just don't know how to book the talent. They don't know how to showcase the efforts. It's just, it's like, again, watching nothing. So that's my take on it. ROH blows it out of the sky by far.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, I'll check out my article on WAW Nation. I am a huge ROH fan. And, my number one favorite wrestler right now in all of wrestling, as far as a full-time wrestler, is Jay Lethal, hands down. And I've said that many times on the show here. I believe that Jay Lethal is the best in the world. And, well, I'm going to write a little bit about it. Good comment here. TNA didn't build new stars besides EC3. They had Angle and Matt Hardy at the top when Galloway was available. TNA has stables every year. I agree. And I mentioned that on my article. Just think about the last 5 years. First of all, you had 10-10-10, which was probably one of the worst storyline flops in professional wrestling history. You had Abyss screaming, 10-10-10, and he kept saying, they. Who are they? They are coming. 10-10-10. And so eventually you get tired of it. And he's in a feud with Jeff Hardy at the time. Still saying 10-10-10. And so come 10-10-10, the big reveal is Jeff Hardy turning heel and aligning with Hogan, Eric Bischoff, and Jeff Jarrett, which is the start of Immortal. And Immortal was an absolute flop. And, oh, man, Immortal was one of the worst ideas. On paper, it had some type of something to it in the beginning. But Immortal was so deep. It's just like the NWO. When the NWO had three people, Hogan, Hall, and Nash, it was gold. It was its best when it had three people. But you start adding DiBiase as a manager, Waltman and Virgil or Vincent at that time, and Bagwell. And we're going to either you join the NWO or we're going to get you. And now you have people like VK Wall Street in the NWO and Scott Norton. It's just when the NWO became deep like that, it just continued to dilute the strength of the organization of the NWO. Now, I understand it's a hostile takeover and either join us or, get beaten to the grave. But, I mean, I would say maybe 5 to 6 people, possibly. But I mean, it was its best at three people. But if you add a few, I understand the whole point. I mean, Bischoff joining was a good idea just because he was the mastermind behind it. I get it. It's its own company. It's trying to kill it, blah, blah, blah. But you started just adding so many people. Horace Hogan and... I mean, you're adding all of these people in the NWO, the fake Sting. It just became just painful to watch. And that's how it was with Immortal. You just start filling Immortal with so many people. It was just a horrible idea. Same thing with Fortune. You start off with the word Fortune, and then you add the word for in Fortune, and Fortune wasn't four people. It was AJ, Beer Money, Doug Williams, Nigel McGuinness or Desmond Wolfe at the time, and you're just and Flair and it was Frankie Kazarian they had, and then I think they had Matt Morgan in it too. So it was just they're called Fortune, but it's like almost double the people in Fortune Four. So it just absolutely amazing. Ace, absolutely ridiculous. Ace of the Nates is another one. Just good storyline behind it. Who's the reveal? You're pulling off the mask. That's interesting. But you just start filling it with just people who we really like. Who cares about Garrett Bischoff being in Aces and Eights? I mean, if I see Garrett Bischoff, no disrespect to Garrett Bischoff, I don't know the guy. I'd bring him here on the show just to get his take on Aces and Eights. It was a great opportunity for Garrett Bischoff, but I mean, I'm a 6'1", 280-pound muscle head, and if I see with a sleeve tattoo and locks, if I see Garrett Bischoff in an alley, in a dark alley, he'd be running away from me. And so why would I be scared of someone like Wes Briscoe and Garrett Bischoff? And Aces and Eights is supposed to be like a mob type of group or a gang type of group. I wouldn't be intimidated by Garrett Bischoff and Wes Briscoe. So that was a bad idea from the very beginning. I mean, just you can go down the factions you can go down a list of factions that was just absolutely ridiculous. So. Yeah, we'll talk about ROH more throughout the week on WAWNation.com, and we'll talk some ROH next week too. But, I'd encourage people to watch Final Battle. Final Battle was a fantastic, fantastic pay-per-view, definitely one of my favorite pay-per-views of the year. So we are going to do what we promised we're going to do. And like I said before, what I love about the Pancakes and Power Slam show is that it's tough to talk about Raw, but we talk about so many things outside of Raw that it makes this show such an amazing, amazing show. So, TNA gets one of these. That pretty much describes that TNA for the year, unfortunately. So I'll try to bring some balance in my harsh criticism of TNA by asking a TNA question to start off the show today. So with that being said, who was the first TNA Knockouts champion? Who was the first TNA Knockouts champion? All right, we're going to give the 2015 year-end awards, WAWNation.com. If you are listening somewhere else, feel free to chime in, but I'll be concentrating most of my focus as far as questions are concerned, as far as categories are concerned, on WAW Nation. So awesome there. So thank you for your support to those who aren't listening through WAW Nation. We had a great, great, great number of listens just throughout the year, but I just looked at one of the numbers a couple of weeks ago, and it was in the thousands. So thank you very much as far as live listeners are concerned. Your support is absolutely amazing. First TNA Knockouts champion. All right, so we're waiting for categories, just whatever category in wrestling. The thing is, Derek is more of a WWE guy, but you guys know very well that WWE, TNA, ROH, and New Japan, I'm a big fan of all four of them. So feel free to pose any category on those areas. But if you can do more, make it WWE heavy so Derek and I can both be involved in the great conversation as far as our picks are concerned. So we'll start off with Raw by Vince McMahon calling out Roman Reigns. Reigns punching McMahon, pushes McMahon to the ground after exchange between the two. Stephanie McMahon comes out and forces police to arrest Reigns. Police refuses. McMahon puts his hand on the police, and he's the one that gets arrested. So definitely an interesting take that they did for opening the show. And, okay, to me there was a negative and a positive about this. The positive, I'll say the positive second. The negative was that cuffing Vince McMahon, I don't necessarily know the purpose of that. At the end of the day, at the end of the show, you know, he says, I'm going to sue the host state of New York, blah, blah, blah. That garnered some heat. I understand that. And then he said he's going to be a special referee. But I don't know if being arrested and sent to the, the New York, police station, I don't know if that really was relevant. I really don't see the relevance of that. I think he would have garnered heat just as much. And I think this is carrying over to whenever Triple H returns, which doesn't make any sense to me because a few days later, all of a sudden he pops up on NXT and, does one of those, this is my baby, I'm going to put myself over because I made NXT, showed no signs of injury. But now for some reason, I guess his promo made him injured on NXT or something. Now he's selling it. It just doesn't make any sense to me. But the positive of this is that it is doing a really, really good job of helping Roman Reigns with eliciting pops. And it's because the McMahon, Stephanie, and Vince, they draw so much heat that he's the de facto face, even to the people who don't like him. And so he's starting to get, way more cheers, which I can, certainly respect as a Roman Reigns apologist. And they're doing, they're doing what they can. They're pulling out all the stops. Vinnie Mac, the man, is making consecutive Raw appearances. We haven't seen this in a long time. So for Vince McMahon to get out the office chair and to come on live TV on Mondays, that's a big deal. So I can certainly appreciate the fact that they're pulling out all the stops and bringing out Vince McMahon to be involved in this storyline.
Either that, or it's just Roman Reigns can't do it on his own. So they have to pull out all the stops to try to get him the pops that he needs. And that's pretty pathetic. The whole thing with Vince getting arrested, I mean, the guy's, he's a billionaire. He can bail himself out. I mean, obviously, the cops are too laid back, too easy. I mean, the whole thing was just poorly done, in my opinion. And you bring in the McMahons to give Roman Reigns heat. They're going to try to do the same thing they did with Austin. It worked with Austin. But, Austin could get those pops on his own. It wasn't until, a while after the Stone Cold character was built that him and Austin started, getting into it. So it's kind of pathetic on Roman Reigns' part that he can't have that natural vibe and natural pop that the people love. So they have to bring in the McMahons to even be more vile and vicious than they've ever been. Stephanie, she's overdramatic. That's getting old. The screaming, they're doing the best, everything they can to make Roman Reigns look like the superhero when they really shouldn't have to do as much. You should just be able to come out, do a thing, and leave, and everyone's happy. But it's not that way anymore. Or he's just not the guy to fit that mold, but anyway, I thought the opening segment was kind of a joke and didn't care for it a whole lot.
Yeah, I can see why. But I'm being optimistic about this because the very fact that Roman Reigns was able to flip so many people over in a matter of just about a year, I mean that's a big deal to me at least, because you don't get that much anymore. Usually when someone, usually when the fans, when they're not interested, they're not interested. And it's hard to flip, you know, a mass amount of fans like that anymore, you know, but good to see that. All right. So what categories do we have? Any categories? This is the year end award show. And you come up with the category. So this is your show. This is the listener show. So please let us know what categories you have in your mind, and we will be happy to say that online. So the Gail Kim is the correct answer. The next trivia question is: Jive Soul Bro was the theme song of what manager? Jive Soul Bro was the theme song of what manager? I think we got some here. Moment of the year. All right, yeah, we'll start off with moment of the year. Moment of the year. Derek, I think I'll let you go first with this. What do you think the moment of the year is? As you're thinking about the moment of the year, I guess I'll go.
It was good to see The Undertaker come back for a couple matches. And okay. He got his vengeance on Brock Lesnar. And 2015 wasn't a good year for wrestling, so I'm going to go with that. I'm trying to think of anything else. I mean, it's always good to see The Undertaker's intro. So what about you? What was Chris Featherstone's pivotal moment of the year?
I think the moment of the year for me was just Sting. Sting's entrance at WrestleMania. Sting appearing at WrestleMania in an in-ring role for the first time of his 56-year life. He, of his 30-year wrestling career, he stepped foot in a WWE ring and at WrestleMania. Win or lose, you can't take that monumental moment. And that's not even the moment of the year. That's a moment of the wrestling lifetime. It's for Sting to come out and to, the entrance was kind of hokey, to be honest with you. I wasn't a big fan of it. Probably the main reason why I wasn't a big fan, because it was in California. So, you know, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock our time. It was just, you know, 6 o'clock in the spring in California if it's 9 o'clock on Eastern time. You know, Derek and I are Eastern time, and so it's tough. It's tough to watch a WrestleMania if it's not in a dome or if it's on the West Coast, because I think just a part of me just believes that it's the glitz, it's the glamour, it's the entertainment, it's the theatrics that encompasses a true, full WrestleMania feel. So having Undertaker, Bray Wyatt's and Undertaker's entrance, I mean, Wyatt and Undertaker, it was closer to being darker, but it still wasn't that pitch black feel that a good entrance would create. And they could have really, really went all out with Sting's entrance, but they just have some people, you know, they have some type of group beating on drums. So it just, they could have made a much bigger effort in that. But just that, I've watched that entrance a bunch of times, just because it was just surreal to me for Sting to come out and actually compete in a match at WrestleMania. So great suggestion there. Moment of the year was absolutely great. That was a really, really, really good category. Biggest letdown of the year. Oh, man. Biggest letdown of the year. I would say Sting losing at WrestleMania. I think, you know, Sting has two Pancakes and Power Slams year-end awards for me, because the best moment was him coming out and the biggest letdown was him exiting, because Not only do you lose to Triple H, but there's no way in the world that I'm going to shake someone's hand who just leveled me with a sledgehammer. Does that make any sense to you, Derek?
Hey, it doesn't. And that was actually my letdown of the year was Sting. I'm not a big Sting guy. I know who he is. I've always said this. But when they were going to bring him in, I was so excited. This is awesome. Sting in WWE. And they just ruined everything they could have done. It was almost like another invasion angle. They had the cream of the crop right there in their hands, and they let it go to waste. And the Sting losing WrestleMania made no sense. And just the whole thing they did with everything about Sting. I would almost wish the WWE never would have brought him in. If you knew what the outcome would be, I mean, it's disappointing as anything I've ever seen.
Yeah, absolutely. Got a comment here about the Divas Revolution being let down. That's a very strong second to me, the Divas Revolution. First of all, you know, you're bringing in 9 divas. You're making 9 divas important at one point in time. Bad idea. You build each and every one of them to be somebody, and it's just, yeah, that was such a letdown. It was a huge letdown. Nikki Bella, you know, she was champ throughout most of the year, which was just a letdown in and of itself. I mean, Nikki Bella's grown, I mean, as far as athletically, but you know what's so crazy? I have an account with IMDb, and I was looking at the WWE's page on the database, and it lists Nikki Bella as her real name, Nicole Garcia, and I think it says something about the her title is Executive Director of Talent Management, something to that nature. And on the list it says John Cena is first. It didn't have a title. Then the second person it has as far as employees is Nikki Bella, or Nicole Garcia is her real name. And I was just shocked at seeing that. Like, she's really, like, she really has an office position for the WWE. If that's accurate, I mean, I don't see why it wouldn't be accurate. She Nicole Garcia, Nikki Bella has an office position. I mean, talk about your Cena loving. It was shocking to me. That was probably the biggest shock of the day for me, that Nikki Bella is much more than just a simple talent. She's the director of talent management or something, executive director of talent management or something crafty like that. But I'm like, whoa, she's, your affiliation with John Cena has pigeonholed you to not making anyone upset anymore. So that's that pretty much says it all as far as you can't make Cena mad, Nikki, because if you do, your paycheck is going to get a lot thinner. So something that you probably don't want to do. Let's see here. We'll go to more topics here, but first we're going to talk about Neville and Owens. I think that they beat. See, this is what I came up with for the reason why Neville beat Owens, and Slick is the correct answer. So great job on that. Next question is, who managed the team of Tajiri and Mikey Whipwreck in ECW? Who managed the team of Tajiri and Mikey Whipwreck in ECW? So Neville and Owens, it seems like the only reason why they did that, especially the type of win, is because I'm starting to believe, and I said this on last week's show, there's a part of me that actually believes that the voting was not rigged. At least some of it wasn't rigged, because I don't think that they actually had in mind that Neville was going to win the breakout star of the year. And I think to atone the fact that they probably just fell right on their faces, Neville has not been looking strong for months. So I think they just wanted him to look strong in the months. They want him to look strong on Raw just as their atonement for saying, yeah, see, look, Neville is the breakout star of the year. See, look, he beat Owens. And I think that's just WWE trying to atone for the fact that people voted for Neville instead of Kevin Owens. So, and then when I come to that, it makes me think, like, I would imagine that probably a very, very small percentage of adults actually voted and during the allotted time they had to vote. So probably the votes were not many, and probably the majority of those were probably children or teenagers. So I can see why Neville won. So they just wanted him to just kind of get a win to make him look like a breakout star. So he was just an expenditure. I mean, he was just really just a throwaway person in this whole segment. The stronger emphasis was Ambrose and Owens. And it's sad for Neville because he's such an amazing hand, but I mean, I really don't see WWE doing anything with him in the near future.
I thought the same thing because, I mean, Neville's an amazing talent. Kevin Owens can afford to lose, I guess. I guess that's how they see it. It was a fluke. Maybe they're trying to keep that spontaneity with Monday Night Raw like they had when Reigns won the title. But, it was good for Neville for that night. But going forward, I still don't see Neville being anything bigger than what he already is currently. So, I mean, Owens could probably afford to lose that. It's a fluke, big deal. He's going to go up against Ambrose and be the tough guy that he is. So, good for that. I was happy to see that. Good for Neville. He needs something. He needs something to pump more energy into him, but again, he's not going to go anywhere after this. He's going to be another Ryback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Sinister Minister, I'll accept it. Absolutely, James Mitchell. Next question is, who's the first black or first African-American NWA World Heavyweight Champion? First African-American NWA World Heavyweight Champion. Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch, good match. It wasn't as good as the pre-show match they had recently. But some storyline developments. Got some boring chants by the smarky Brooklyn crowd, but I didn't think it was boring. I mean, it was slow at times, but, we can't keep, we're in such a popcorn microwave society that we got to just appreciate, good, slow building storytelling matches. And so, they gave them time. They gave the Divas some time. That's been something that people have been complaining about for so long. So once they get time, they get boring chants. And those are two of the best legit women's wrestlers in the entire roster. So, there was some arm cranks and things like that just kind of slowed it down a little bit. And, I understand that, but it was a decent match. So I know you're not a big fan of the Divas division, but best show to me was the best televised show. I would give that to I see best show here. So whoever put this down here, best show, I'm gonna ask to be more specific. So best television show, best WWE network show, be a little bit more specific there. Best wrestler, as far as wrestling ability, I would certainly give that to Jay Lethal. I would certainly say the best wrestler in 2015, the number one wrestler was Jay Lethal, hands down. What about you, Derek?
Best wrestling champion. I would Jay Lethal. I absolutely agree. And he's a total package. He's got everything. And this is probably the most I've watched ROH this year, 2015. And the guy blows me away every week. He's absolutely amazing. I hear there's rumblings where he's talking with WWE and yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
Don't. Stay ROH as long as you can. Go to WWE when they've got nothing to do but push you to the top. Because, I mean, he's a gem. He's a diamond in the rough. He's not even in the rough anymore. I mean, the guy is absolutely phenomenal. He deserves to be in the WWE, but they'll bury him. So, but, yeah, I'm totally on board with him. And he can take that ROH to the top.
Yeah, absolutely. Brobo Brazil was he was an unofficial NWA world champ. He wasn't recognized, unfortunately. So we have not had the correct answer yet. Ron Simmons is on here, but he was not the NWA world champ. He was the WCW world champion. When he won, it was the WCW title. Let's see here. Yep, still don't have the correct answer yet. So we have best pay-per-view, to be a little bit more specific, the best pay-per-view. Now, that's a really good question. Best pay-per-view, I would give that to Wrestle Kingdom 9, I would say. I would say for a four-hour pay-per-view, it was so, I mean, the pay-per-view was absolutely amazing to me. And the match between Tanahashi and Okada was just amazing. And the Intercontinental title match, Nakamura went against Ibushi, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken. I'm sure that the amazing fans would know, but I think it was Ibushi. That match was absolutely amazing as well. But yeah, Wrestle Kingdom 9, I would say it was Ibushi. Wrestle Kingdom 9 for sure. It was absolutely amazing. I can't really think of a better pay-per-view than Wrestle Kingdom 9. Takeover Brooklyn was really good too. That was really good. Yeah, I think I'm pretty much set cuz I can't think. I mean, Final Battle was good. But I think I'm pretty set on Wrestle Kingdom 9. What do you think, Derek?
Honestly, kind of a weird twist on it. I kind of like Payback from May. You had a few things. Sheamus and Ziggler was an awesome match. And Ryback versus Wyatt, probably Ryback's one of his best. Rusev and Cena were that whole I Quit match. That was good. So... It's kind of hard to say. They were all, like, the pay-per-views were all solid. They all stayed the same. And, again, I stick mainly with WWE because I'm a lame-o and don't pay a whole lot of attention to the other ones. But I'll give that one. That was the one that I kind of remember more than any of them. Just liked it and enjoyed it. And it was throughout the whole show. It was pretty good. So I kind of like Payback.
Yeah. I think it was pretty good, too. Kalisto defeating Kofi Kingston and then them coming out and Big E with Sin Cara. We don't have too much status on Sin Cara's injury, but I think it's a Sin Cara curse. I don't know. Maybe because sin is the first word of his name or something. I don't know. I don't get it. It's just an injury curse. It doesn't matter if it's Hunico or Mystico. It doesn't matter who's under the Sin Cara mask. It's just no good. So he separated his shoulder. You know, kudos to him for banging it out, you know, for the rest of the match. But we don't know the severity of it. And, you know, we may just get the Usos versus the New Day. And, you know, I'm an Usos fan. I'm hanging on by, you know, being an Usos fan. But, it's really tough for me to try to hold on to the Usos. Nope, I still don't see it. I still don't see the the article, I still don't see the correct answer for the first black NWA World Heavyweight Champion. Derek, do you have an answer?
Well, I mean, I was going to agree with the Ron Simmons, so I'm kind of I'm scratching my head myself. I don't know. Chris, what's the answer? Oh, whatever.
The correct answer is Ron the Truth Killing. That is the correct answer. My boy, R-Truth, the first African-American NWA World Heavyweight Champion. How about that? Joe Pedicino was the Joe Pedicino was the owner of what federation? Let's get some of these categories up. Most underrated in the WWE, Cesaro, hands down to me. I have absolutely no idea why the WWE is holding back on Cesaro. He is a shoo-in, unquestionable top guy. He has the charisma. He has the style. The Cesaro section is something, is a brand for him to stick with. It works. His in-ring performance backs it up by miles. There's no way that Cesaro shouldn't have been a top guy by the time he got injured. And the problem with that is there's a big part of me that believes that the WWE is not going to move forward with Cesaro when he comes back. He should be a main event player, hands down. And the WWE is just making so many ridiculous decisions. I just imagine a heel Seth Rollins against a babyface Cesaro for the world title. I mean, oh my goodness, that would run circles around most wrestling matches that we've seen the entire year. So, hands down for me, without a question, is Cesaro.
I would take Cesaro. Before Cesaro, I'd say Fandango, but that's just because that's me. But definitely Cesaro. I mean, by far. And it's, I don't know what the WWE's doing with him. Are you kidding me? Showcase this guy. Put him on the forefront. And the Cesaro section, he's got everything that the WWE's looking for, and they're trying to push that onto Roman Reigns. Well, guess what? Cesaro has it. Roman Reigns doesn't. That's it.
Yeah. Roman, you know, I think you should give some type of credit to Roman Reigns. He's grown like ridiculousness as far as his in-ring work. Give him a little slack. I know he's not your guy, but, I mean, you know, be a little bit more objective, I would encourage you to do. All right, so Joe Pedicino. Who do we got? Who do we got with Joe Pedicino. All right, Miss TV interrupted by Ryback, then Goldust, and Zack Ryder, and R-Truth. Once again, it's on me. That's a shirt. I mean, when I think, you know, I own my own business, so I think about where, you know, how can we make money by these things? The people are gravitating to it, and this is a moneymaker. I would buy an R-Truth It's On Me t-shirt without question. And another funny segment with R-Truth. He, you know, they try to do it with Santino. They try to do the funny thing. You know, you usually have your funny type of baby face or heel, usually a baby face, but you usually have like just the comic relief person, whoever that is. And, you know, Santino was that guy for a while. But, man, I tell you, R-Truth is just really honing in that position, and he is absolutely hilarious. And it was certainly the LOL moment of the year when, you know, the whole Money in the Bank thing. That was just I literally laughed out loud when I saw that segment, and I kept, you know, watching it and rewinding it over and over again because it was so funny. And just this whole thing again, it's on me. That's a shirt right there. It's on me, R-Truth. And I think it was great. But you know, Big Show comes out. What a way to return the Big Show. Please retire Chance, which I thought that they were rude for a long time, but now it's to the point where I just had to wave the white flag on that one, because I agree. Big Show needs to be making his exit. There's nothing left for the Big Show to do. There's nowhere to put the Big Show, nowhere to insert him in a feud to make me care. I mean, at least his feud with Roman Reigns, the last man standing match, it actually helped, but that was probably his last hurrah, to be honest with you. I have no desire to watch the Big Show, and now he's entering himself as number one. Who cares? There's no one in the world who cares about the Big Show entering the Royal Rumble. It was such a waste of a segment for me, and I do not care about the Big Show in the WWE at all. I mean, he's put in his work. He's been wrestling for 20 years now, actually. So kudos to him. You know, major, major kudos. Make him an agent. Put him in a backstage role. Give him an office position. But, you know, take him off my TV.
That's a sad thing to say, because the Big Show deserves so much better. But, again, there's nothing else. They've disgraced and ruined his character so much in the last 5-10 years. Like Kane, there's nothing else you can do. What else can you do to make these guys save face? Nothing. And so I don't want to see the Big Show retire, but it's that time, because the WWE won't let him do anything else. I mean, he's not believable. He comes back. He's tough. He's throwing stuff around. He gets in the ring between bell to bell. He's an absolute nightmare. He's disgraceful. They make him that way. He jobs to everybody. He's not a tough guy, and they don't want you to think he is. So, I mean, that's what he needs to do. With R-Truth, I love the guy. He's hilarious. I mean, they should put that on a T-shirt, and I would buy it because it's on me, the T-shirt. That's what's on. It's on me.
That's right.
Power Slam, I'll kill him.
There you go. The T-shirt is actually on me. So that's... There you go. Need more categories? I see a category here. Best female wrestler. See, and I'm partial again because, I think I'm going to say Sasha Banks. Just because, you know, her being called up. I'm a Bayley fan. I like Bayley. Bayley's my favorite. Bayley and Becky Lynch are my two favorites. I'm a huge Asuka fan too. I would say those are my three. I can easily say Asuka just because her work as Kana in Japan. But you know, the push and the I guess the climb kind of makes her not number one. And the only reason why I would say Sasha Banks is because she actually has that raw. That raw part on her resume now, as opposed to Bayley. Now I watch Breaking Ground every week. I've actually watched it, all of them, including the one that came on last night. And I understand what Bayley's saying as far as just her love for NXT, and it's going to be bittersweet when she gets called up. I can see that. There's many people like The Ascension and Neville and Tyler Breeze that can say the same thing. So I can certainly understand Bayley's part with that, but just that, you know, Sasha Banks, she has that raw part on her resume that makes her number one for me.
Yeah. Sasha Banks. I mean, they all kind of meld together. I mean, Paige is a good performer. I'm not a big Divas guy, but I could go with Paige any day. And pretty much. I mean, Charlotte, she's shown a lot for the small time she's been there, but I'm still not totally sold on it because I think the Divas image gets in the way. But, you know, Sasha Banks is great. I'd like to see Natalya get back in. I would love to see her mix it up with Charlotte, Sasha. But
yeah.
I'm with you. Sasha Banks, I throw that in there. You got me convinced, Chris. You made me a Divas fan.
Nice. That's awesome. Joe Pedicino. Huh. Interesting. Don't see any correct answers for Joe Pedicino. So you get a buzzer. He is the owner, well, was the owner, of the Global Wrestling Federation. Global Wrestling Federation, GWF, who I just noticed, I think probably within a week, that the WWE Network has GWF stuff up. But it's not the GWF, it's the USWA stuff, though. It's under the GWF category, but I know they're going to be, you know, refreshing and updating with more content, but you know, they're showing the USWA stuff. I want GWF stuff. I used to love GWF as a kid. So yeah, GWF, they have AWA up now. I watched some Smoky Mountain content on the WWE Network, so I'm loving the fact that they're actually having other promotions up there. I absolutely love that. Next question is, what year did Shane Douglas throw down the NWA title? What year did Shane Douglas throw down the NWA title? All right, more categories. We need some more categories from the listeners. Until then, Ryback and Big Show kind of talked about that. Was count out. Sheamus, Barrett, and Rusev defeating Ambrose and the Usos. I have no idea whether they're trying to push this League of Nations. I literally have no clue. I mean, they're talking about Barrett, you know, having a neck injury and it being worse than he thought. Rusev, he's just really caught crossfires of just Sheamus being important and then him being not important. And then Del Rio, you know, he hasn't been relevant since he came. They're just driving Del Rio into the the television airwaves, and it's really tough for us to watch Del Rio. Me, I was speaking for myself. It's really tough for me to watch Del Rio on a television because this guy, man, I mean, he's in phenomenal shape, by the way, just great shape. Always been a solid worker. But his charisma is he has less charisma than probably a cat, a big fat cat scratching itself on the floor. I would say that cat has more charisma than Alberto Del Rio.
I actually like to watch cats scratch themselves. It's kind of funny. But Alberto Del Rio,
yeah, he's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, they show more. Yeah, they've got more guff. But Alberto Del Rio is being shoved down her throat because of an incident that happened and yada, yada, yada. They got to make it up to us. So I can expect that. I mean, him himself, I think, is a great talent. And he was missed when he was gone. I don't miss the. I'm glad he doesn't do the where he used to honk the horn forever. Needs to come out. That drove me absolutely nuts. That he doesn't do that anymore. So I'm cool with it. But most part, Alberto Del Rio's. They're just throwing it down our throats, like they tried to do with Ryback and Ziggler and Wyatt. And with them, it's not working. League of Nations is a joke. It's another one of those. It's a TNA faction. Let's just call it that. That's about as good as it's going to get. And it's not gonna last into 2016 at all.
No. I'm kind of believing that it's going to be a another nexus for this for John Cena, to be honest with you. And Cena is going to run roughshod through the League of Nations. It's just another, you know, just another chink in the Cena armor. 1994 is the correct answer. Great job. What year did Ric Flair? That's my dusty right there. What year did Ric Flair win his first NWA world title? I said, what year did Ric Flair win his first NWA world title, baby? great category, Heel of the Year, 1981. All right, good job. That was very quick. I think when I did the Dusty impersonation, it kind of made you think a little quicker. So I'll just take it as that. I'll believe that for myself, and you know, we'll just go with it. Who held the NWA World Title greater than 4 years in the 1990s? Who held the NWA World Heavyweight Championship for over 4 years in the 1990s? Next category, Derek, Heel of the Year. What do you got? Heel of the Year.
Heel of the Year for me, I'm honestly, I'd have to go to Seth Rollins. I mean, he's carried the championship for the WWE and before his injury, obviously. He's done a decent role with the heel. I mean, he's a snotty, stuck-up, two-faced, you know, whatever you want him to be. He's played that well. Sometimes it goes a little too long with it to where it gets boring. But on top of everything, Seth Rollins is really, he made that position his. He's done an excellent job with it, so... I mean, Seth Rollins, for me, has to absolutely take the cake. Heel of the Year.
I don't agree with that. You're my boy, Derek. I respect and appreciate your wrestling scholarly insight, but I just couldn't stand Seth Rollins as a heel. I couldn't do it. I know that you came around because you weren't a big fan of Seth Rollins in the very beginning. I know you came around, but I never did. I think that he was a slimy, weaselly heel. I don't think that, you know, heels are heels. And he's supposed to play that character, but I don't think that the WWE did a good job at all making him a strong. Listen, if you're going to be a weaselly heel, make him a strong weaselly heel. Flair was a weaselly heel. He'll retreat in a minute. He'll duck behind the Four Horsemen. He'll, you know, flip over a rope and slide out and run to the back. He'll grab his belt. He'll put woman or baby doll in front of him. You know, he'll do any of that stuff. But at least there was some strength. At least he looked like a strong heel that, you know, you don't want to mess with if he's, you know, if he has all his ducks in a row and he's prepared for you, you know, you're going to have a showdown with Ric Flair. And he backed it up because he was the man. He played the man. He acted like the man, but he was weaselly. He retreated. He was a great heel. But with Seth Rollins, the thing is with Rollins, he got beat up all the time. He retreated. And he got beat up, so it just didn't make – he never looked strong. I mean, beating people like Kane to make yourself look stronger? Who doesn't beat Kane nowadays? You know, that's basically the same thing as someone like Bo Dallas beating Kane. If Bo Dallas beat Kane next Monday on Raw, it wouldn't be a huge surprise because it's Kane. Unfortunately, that's very unfortunate, but that's just the way it goes. Kane losing a match isn't a shock at all. All right, who do we have? 1981 is the correct answer. As far as the I see Dan Severn here. Absolutely. My choice is Kevin Owens. I believe that Kevin Owens is the heel of the year. Yeah, I can't really think of anyone else as being the heel of the year. I think he's done a fantastic job as playing the heel. He actually, when he left ROH, he was actually a babyface. He came in, he beat CJ Parker in his first match in WWE NXT, and he was a babyface. And he quickly turned not too long after that against Sami Zayn. And won the NXT title 2 months later. And, you know, it was cool. It was great for Owens. And he's been a great heel ever since. And I don't like the fact that he's retreating so much, but I like the fact that he's being tactical with it. Like, they're doing the heel thing with Owens a lot better because he retreat and then he comes back, you know, later in the evening, just like what he did with Ambrose and powerbombed the Thor table. Now that he looks strong, that makes him a good heel because he retreat, but he did it. He does it in a calculating form. That's the reason why I think that they're building him much better as a heel than Rollins. They did Rollins ever. Dan Severn is the correct answer. Great job. The Wall went by what name in TNA? The Wall went by what name in TNA? All right. We'll take a quick break, and we're going to come back with the most shocking return. That's a great category. Most shocking return. We'll be right back.
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show, hosted by Chris Featherstone and Derek of Crave Wrestling. This is the new Tuesday Night Titans.
All right, so we're going to do the most shocking return debut. I'm going to do return because I think debut is Sting in the WWE. Most shocking return. I would say most shocking return. Shocking. The word shocking is a very cool word when it comes to professional wrestling, but unfortunately that's not very, that doesn't apply much with creative nowadays. So I'll say The Undertaker. Yeah, I'll say Undertaker, Night of Champions, thinking about it a little bit. I think that's my guess. Well, I guess that's my answer. It's The Undertaker and Night of Champions. I wasn't happy about it very much because I wanted to bet off Rollins because I just didn't really like him as champ. But I think, I'm sorry, not Night of Champions, but it was Payback, I believe, was it? Because they did the SummerSlam thing. Money in the Bank was June. That was the Bray Wyatt thing. And I think Lesnar and Rollins was Payback, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so so I would say Taker at Payback was the most shocking return. And that's not saying a lot, to be honest with you. It's just, yeah. Someone's saying... Malice is the correct answer. Great job. Sting is actually net last year. Yeah, I'm not saying Sting. I was saying Sting as a debut. I'm saying his debut in a WWE ring. Because I see return and debut, excuse me, as two different things. So I would say as a debut, as far as in-ring debut, would be Sting. But of course, we know that he debuted last year at Survivor Series. But yes, most shocking return, I would say Taker. The Dudleys is up there too. That was really cool. You know what? I would say Bubba Ray at the Royal Rumble. I would say that's the most shocking return because I think that the way that they booked it was amazing. You kind of was wondering when Taker was going to come back because you kind of felt like he was going to come back, but you know the Philly marked out like crazy when Bully Ray came, and you could tell that he was just feeling all of that just as he was walking down, and he was still with TNA at the time, and no one had a clue that Bully Ray was going to return, or Bubba Ray. And the WWE. So, yeah, I think that'll be my first, my number one will be Bubba Ray at the Royal Rumble.
I was with you when I said Undertaker, but yeah, I saw the Dudleys. Yeah, their return, it was great, but it's panned out to be garbage. And so it kind of killed the momentum they had behind them as far as a great comeback return. But yeah, you're right, the Royal Rumble when Bubba Ray came out, I didn't see that coming. I marked out totally. But The Undertaker, yeah. I got to put that in there as my top. So I'm not arguing with the Bubba Ray, but again, the Dudleys, when they came back, it was great, but it's just been nothing but crap ever since. So
right.
It is kind of damper on that. Undertaker still saved face, and he's still the Undertaker. So.
Yep, absolutely. Malice, like I said, correct answer there. All right, Battleground. Thank you for that clarification there. Yes, it was Battleground when the Rollins and Lesnar main event was at Battleground. Thank you very, very much for that. All right, we can take one more, and then we'll get into the flavor of the week. We'll talk very quickly about Cena and Del Rio. Disqualification, League of Nations interfere, then the Usos appears, but get outnumbered. Reigns makes a save. Man comes out and books a match of him being the special guest referee for next week. And here's the thing. McMahon drew over 100,000 more viewers. They dropped 500,000 viewers when McMahon was gone, and then they gained 100,000 more when McMahon came back. So they gained about 800,000 when he came initially, and then they lost about 500, and then they gained about 100,000 more, a little bit over 100,000 more when he came back. So it goes to show that Vince McMahon is a ratings magnet. I mean, 70 years young, you can say what you want, but the guy draws ratings. So that's why I'm thinking it's going to be interesting to me. I'm interested to see, we might see a Triple H return next week to probably strip either help help Sheamus get the title off of Reigns. We may see that. Or we may just see Triple H just totally beat up Roman Reigns and leads to a title match between him and Triple H at Royal Rumble. I'd rather see a non-title match between Reigns and Triple H and have Reigns work his way back up again for the next few months until WrestleMania. I think it would help Reigns' character if he doesn't carry the belt until WrestleMania. This Triple H and Roman Reigns thing, it's money. I think it has a bunch of potential to it. I'm looking forward to it. And so we'll see. At least it brings some intrigue about next week, and I'm looking forward to see Vinnie Mac with a 70-year-old body moving around that ring next week.
I mean, it's great. I love to see Vince McMahon when he comes strutting down with the No Chance in Hell. But, yeah, I mean, I could almost see if Triple H wins the championship one more time and then he loses it at WrestleMania, that could draw money. If he does, in fact, challenges Reigns, beats him, whether it be at Royal Rumble or even at a Monday Night Raw, who knows. So I could see that storyline really taking fruition as far as, Reigns has to, at WrestleMania, fight back, beat Triple H. And that could draw money, and it would draw money, and I'm excited to – if that was to take place, I would be happy with that, if it's done right. Yeah. WWE is notorious for making flops.
Yeah, unfortunately. But, yeah, I think that's definitely some promise to it. The Rock announced that he'll be at the WrestleMania. Probably not in a wrestling role because he'll be – I know he has some type of contractual calls as far as, like, insurance or something like that he probably won't be competing. But he'll be there, at least he'll draw some type of intrigue by The Rock being there. All right, so here's the thing. My last question is, name at least four members of the original Main Event Mafia. Name at least four members of the original Main Event Mafia. We'll do Flavor of the Week, and then we'll address one more question. Listen, this has been absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for all your interaction. This was really, really fun, a lot more fun. I was expecting it to be very fun. But it was a lot more fun than I expected. So kudos to all the interaction and great categories. This is the inaugural. We'll do it next year as well because it went over very, very well. So great job with that. Until then, we will do the flavor of the week for the Royal Rumble 30th entrance. And we will get that started here, ladies and gentlemen, flavor of the week.
It is now time for the Flavor of the Week.
Well, we got a few minutes left. So, like I said, 30, mentioned this last week. 30th was X-Pac, and that was the Rock winning, but he really didn't win because he stepped out first. So it really should have been Big Show at that time, which is very interesting why they did that. But he won. So 2001, the 30th entrant was Rikishi, and he really only stayed there for, you know, like 2.5 minutes. Austin was there for a little under 10 minutes, but he ended up winning that one. And then 2002, 30th entrant was Booker T, and he stayed there, staying there for about a half a minute. I think he was, I think he was kind of injured around that time or something like that. And he was in there for half a minute. Triple H ended up winning that one. That was his return, his triumph of returns, of course. You know, big shout out to Kurt Hennig. He had a pretty good showing in 2002. 30th entrant for 2003 was The Undertaker. And him and Lesnar was the last two people there. And Lesnar won. So that was a pretty good Royal Rumble. 30th entrant for 2004 was Goldberg. And he got eliminated by Kurt Angle. Chris Benoit ended up winning that by eliminating Big Show. So that was a pretty good one there. You know, there was a, you know, that's what we did, but that 2004 was a really, really good Royal Rumble. And then finally 2005 was Ric Flair. He was only there for about a couple minutes, got eliminated by Edge. Batista was the runner there. Him and Cena got into it, and then Vince McMahon blew out his knee as he was sliding in the ring, and he had to sit down in the corner. So that was my memorable Royal Rumble out of those five, was the whole McMahon spot. That was really interesting. Give me a good 20 seconds, and we'll spend about a minute and a half on the last question. What do you got, Derek?
2003 was great. Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker. You didn't know what was going to happen between the two, like 10 years down the road. So that was great. And I love seeing Kurt Hennig in there. I mean,
yeah.
Mr. Perfect, huge mark out for him. Loved it. With Chris Benoit winning the 2004, that was also a great spot. And, you know, whatever happened to Chris Benoit was unfortunate, but absolutely wonderful. So there were some good Royal Rumble matches between that five-year period.
Yep, absolutely agree. All right, real quick, Derek, what is your match of the year?
Wow, match of the year for me would be The Undertaker against Brock Lesnar, Hell in a Cell. To me, that just really brought everything together, and I was glad the way it ended, liked it. It was kind of funny and quirky, but it didn't really do anything to hurt either one's image, so I definitely want to go with that. I was on the edge of my seat the whole time.
Fair enough. I would say, real quick, Nash, Booker T, Angle, Sting, and Steiner. Yes, that's five. I asked for four, so you overachieved. Great job there. Awesome. Making the mafia. But I would say Bayley and Sasha Banks, not the Iron Man match, but the one in Brooklyn. I would say that match was just stellar. That was my match of the year. That, and I was a big fan of the Bullet Club, AJ Styles and the Young Bucks against Matt Sydal, ACH, and Cedric Alexander. They had a six-man match on ROH TV. Please watch that if you haven't yet. That match was absolutely amazing. That was, I would say it's toss-up between that. If I had to choose one, it would be Bayley and Sasha Banks. But that one's arguable as far as number one as well. So right now I'm saying that, but I might change my mind. But that's the number one right now. Awesome, awesome time. I had such good fun. Listen, everyone enjoy their new year. Have a happy new year. Stay safe. Be safe. Do good. Be good. Love you all. God bless you all. Daddy loves my boys, Ian and Elijah. And you all have been the best fan support that anyone could ever have for the year 2015. I'm so grateful, and I'm speaking on behalf of Derek as well. So grateful for your support. Thank you so much. Enjoy your New Year's Day. See you next week. God bless. Goodbye.